turn in your Bibles to Nehemiah 12. I started quite a long time ago a series out of Nehemiah, just looking at it from the standpoint of leadership. And just taking the lessons kind of been slowly working our way through. We're up to lesson number 21. One more chapter to go, probably one or two more lessons to go, and then I'll finish it, write a book, and retire. And so we are going to look at this, chapter 12. Actually, as the whole chapter. Are you there? Can I see it for a second?
I'm not there.
You're not there. Who's there? Let me see it for a second. It's the whole chapter, but I don't want to read the whole thing. That's fine. Thanks. Okay. Scott is going to read Nehemiah 12, 1 through 9. That's where we're going to read, just, and then I'll get some more scriptures here. Eli, read Proverbs 27, 23. Mathen, Nehemiah 12, 8. Caleb, Exodus 18, 17 and 18. Josh Neal, Nehemiah 12, 8, the second time. Isaac, Romans 16, 1 through 6. And Justin, 1 Thessalonians 1, verse 2. Okay, so we've been looking, examining in the book of Nehemiah specifically what made Nehemiah an effective leader. So if you don't know anything about him, or you weren't here in the early stages, so Nehemiah was a cupbearer. So literally, he was the guy who would taste the king's food to see if it was poison, and if he didn't die, then the king would eat it. So he doesn't have any super great training that we see, and yet he becomes an incredibly effective leader. So we've been looking at focusing on the book of Nehemiah only on what kinds of things did he do that made him a good leader. In the book of Nehemiah, one of the recurring things that you find is that there are lists of names. Five times in the book of Nehemiah you find that Nehemiah the leader, he makes a list and is written down for us. And so the very simple lesson is that in many different ways, leadership involves lists. So this lesson is called Lists and Leaders. Nehemiah 12, we'll just read 1 through 9, although the whole chapter is a part of it. Go ahead, Scott.
Now these are the priests and the Levites who came up with Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Jeshua, Zeriah, Jeremiah, Ezra, Amariah, Malach, Hattach, Shechaniah, Rehum, Meremoth, Iddo, Ginathoi, Abijai, and I'm murdering these, Benjamin, Madiah, Bilgah, Shemaiah, Joiarib, Jedidiah, Salu, Amok, Hekiah, and Jedidiah. These were the heads of the priests and the brethren in the days of Jeshua. Moreover, the Levites were Jeshua, Binui, Kadmiel, Sherebiah, Judah, and Mattaniah, who led the thanksgiving psalms, and he and his brethren. Also, Babakiah and Uni, their brethren, stood across from them in their duties.
Okay. And the key when reading those names, just say it confidently and you'll fool everybody else. If you're confident when you say it, other people go, oh, is that how you say it? There's none of us that are right. And any time I go on the tour to Israel, then they, even if I think I know what it is, it's nothing close. It doesn't matter. That's why it'd be a lot easier if it was just Bob. Bob, Bill, and Joe. Okay, so let's talk about lists and leaders. So lesson number one in leadership. You want to be any kind of leader. Lesson number one has to do with knowing your people. So the book of Nehemiah five times, chapter 3, 7, 10, 11, and 12, it lists entire, there's a long list of names. Basically, 47 verses, there's no great action that happens in this chapter. It's just long lists. Actually, chapter 12 is multiple lists. It's lists of leaders, lists of priests, lists of all kinds of different things. And so it names them by names, the names that he was struggling with, but that was normal to them. So the issue is, if you want to be effective in any level of leadership, obviously we're applying it to the kingdom of God, but in any level of leadership, names are important. And that's a very simple leadership lesson. Proverbs 27:23.
Be diligent to know the state of your flocks and attend to your herds.
Okay, another translation, know the condition of your flocks. Give careful attention to your herds. And so this is often, how many of you do this? Like, man, I know the face, I just can't remember the name. Anybody ever say that?
Oh, yeah.
So this is true. The issue is that names take work. It takes work to be able to retain them, and usually our brains don't naturally retain them. And we had, for a brief time, had Adam Porter on staff and sitting on the platform. Sometimes we are remarking or asking. I'm asking, who is this? Or talking about who's missing or whatever it might be. And a lady had been coming on a number of times, and I leaned over to Adam and I said, that she walked in late, and I said, Adam, who's that lady who just walked in, young lady, who just walked in? And he thought, he looked very serious, and he leaned over to me and he goes, I think she's someone's daughter. And I said, thank you, Adam. I said, that,
well done,
sir. I said, most girls are. I said, you narrowed it right down, didn't you? So I still mock him about that to this day, which is always helpful. But this is the issue, is that, so Nehemiah as a leader, think about this, what made him effective? Very simple. This is a man who knew names. And that is a leadership. What? Okay, so why is that important? Number one, because names are important to people. It's important to them. People respond to those who care enough to remember their name. And that's just a truth. If you're speaking to somebody as, hey, you, or we're Christians, so brother, that covers, isn't that great? You can cover a lot of ground. But people associate concern with someone who takes the care to remember their name. And I could tell you stories of people who've responded where I have taken the time to learn their name and call them by name, and there are, depending on their background, there are certain people that makes a great impact on them. It's real impression, because they're equating, if you took the time to know my name, you care about me. And that's why it's important to try to learn people's names. Number two, names are important to us. The reason why you should learn somebody else's name is because it makes it much easier for you to care for them. So, depersonalizing someone it makes it easier to diminish them. I don't know if you know this, that in any form of racism will never name the person's name. Any form of racist, what they do is they diminish as a people. That's why you'll, from time to time, we see in videos in Sunday school, we show it, is that Palestinians or Arabs, they show horrific cartoons. They are depersonalizing, and they have derogatory names for entire races, because if you are not calling them by name, it becomes easy to diminish them. Becomes easier to not care. And so that's a negative. But so if you have somebody who, there's that guy who's been coming versus Steve Johnson and his wife, you know, Maureen or whatever, which one are you going to care for? It is human nature. It is much easier to care for people who you know their name. It's a very simple leadership lesson. So, one of the simple tests, I have even just as a discipleship, so many of you think that there's a possibility you may want to preach the gospel, or you know that you want to preach the gospel. So, and I've given you a very simple test, and that is, who has been missing from church in the last week? Could you name by name three people that have been missing from church that you haven't seen? Because that's a very important soul. Nehemiah, in this long list, you don't write a list like that unless you're thinking about them. So it's a very important test. So this taking responsibility or personal responsibility for our people in prayer. John 17, Jesus is praying for his men. He says, I don't want to lose any of them. He's praying for his men. So Nehemiah is listing them, and while it doesn't specifically say this, I bet Nehemiah used lists like this to pray for people. I have lists that I pray through. I don't pray by rote every single day, but I have lists. I have the whole church. I have disciples. I have pioneer pastors. I have missionaries. I have lists. I have you on a list, no doubt, multiple lists, so that I can pray for you. Now, it'd be a lot easier for me to say, Lord, bless the church. But that's not what Nehemiah said here, right? He didn't say, God, there's a lot of people. No, he went through Shealtiel and however the heck you pronounce these names and whatever it is. He named them by name. So, then the lists in Nehemiah are actually lists of function. They're not just lists of people. What we're reading in chapter 12, Nehemiah knew who was present and what they were doing. So it's a function issue. Nehemiah 12:8, the first time.
Moreover, the Levites were Jeshua, Benui, Kadmiel, Sherebiah, Judah, and Mattaniah, who led the thanksgiving psalm, he and his brethren.
Okay, so why do you think, so it tells us, first of all, that they were Levites, which was the tribe, and it says these were the men who were in charge of the songs of thanksgiving. So it's Jeshua, Benui, and Wolendi. Wolendi, right? It's Casey Wolin's in there. So why, think practically, why does he need to know this? What's the purpose of writing down not just their name, but what they do? What do you think?
Knowing the talents.
Okay, so knowing what they can do, that'd be true. But for what purpose? Caleb?
Knowing what's getting done.
Knowing what's getting done, yes.
Showing appreciation.
That could be, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. Yeah, good. You're thinking? Yeah, so Caleb, take that a step farther. So that would be one side of the coin. Knowing what's getting done or what's not getting done. Exactly. So the whole point, remember, in lots of different ways, I've pointed out to you, a leader is a thinker. To come up with a long list like that, this guy was thinking. So he is thinking who's singing around here. And he writes it down. Who's leading the Levites or whatever group? There's a whole bunch of different groups that are named in all the different lists. So that is a very important. So knowing your people, names are important, functions are important, and working out, that's how you work out what is getting done or what is not getting done. So that's the first lesson from the list. Second lesson has to do with delegation. It's the second reason why he had lists. So these are lists actually of leaders. He is not actually naming every single person in the whole group. But he is actually listing the leaders of groups. Men doing different tasks. So, wise leadership knows that you shouldn't try to do everything yourself. You shouldn't try to do everything yourself. That's unnecessary and not helpful. Exodus 17 and 18.
So Moses' father-in-law said to him, "The thing that you do is not good. Both you and these people who are with you will surely wear yourselves out. For this thing is too much for you. You are not able to perform it by yourself."
Okay, so this is Moses. One of the things that you can fall into is Nehemiah obviously saw what could be done, and some guys, their answer is they do it all. And they do things. So, his father-in-law says, "You're wearing yourself out. This is not helping you, and it's not helping the people, because then there are stuff that only you could do that you're not doing the best job for the people. So, if you try to do everything yourself, number one, you will waste time on small details. That's invariably what happens. The small mistakes of pioneer pastors. The other day I had some new artwork come in, and the artwork came, and I had forgotten to ask the guy for something I needed just for the website. It was the wrong size. So, you know, hey, I'll just quickly whack this out. Back when I had anything to do with graphics, it was another program, so I've been learning Adobe and Photoshop and whatever a little bit. And so, yeah, I'll just chop this and put it in. An hour and a half later, I'm dawning on me, you know, I got real work to do. I have been trying to do this stupid little flyer, and I'm still not done with it. And I said, why have I just wasted an hour and a half? This is stupid. I could have been doing something else, and finally do what I should have done. Ask Jonathan, and he did it about a second and a half, you know, which is what I should have done in the first place. So, but that's what happens. This is a very common, this is very realistic. Pioneer pastors, I see this, that they are working a job. Remember, simple questions that I often get asked, how do you work a job, stay married, take care of your kids, and then build a church? And so you have, and they have limited time. And I know pioneer pastors, they'll spend 12 hours working on a flyer. That's stupid. That doesn't make sense. Why do that? So, number two, you fail to do what is important. This is often a common problem of guys who are learning how to work in any environment, is they focus on things that aren't important in the first place. Right? So there's an entire construction site, and they've organized all their screws by size. That's great, but we had framing to do, or, you know, a house to be built. So you fail to do what is important if you try to do it all yourself. As Moses' father-in-law said, three, you get worn out. And number four, you fail to develop people. You fail to develop disciples. So that's if you try to do everything yourself. And very simply is there's a lot of things that other people should be doing, because they can, or because they could do it better than you, or whatever. So why should I spend my time and give my brain to learning Photoshop when Jonathan Heimberg could do it in his sleep with one hand while, you know, composing a song on the other hand? You know, why should I do that? That doesn't make sense. So, wise leadership involves delegation, and that's what we are looking at in the scripture here. To delegate means to entrust to another, to appoint as your representative. So, second leadership lesson, Nehemiah left other men in charge. He put responsibility on other men. Nehemiah 12:8.
Moreover, the Levites Jeshua, Benui, Kadmiel, Sherebiah, Judah, and Mattaniah, which was over the thanksgiving, he and his brethren.
Okay, so here Mathan was in charge of the songs of thanksgiving. So he was in charge. That's the simple point. He's in charge. That's a very simple point in Moshe Dayan, used to be a general leader in Israel, and he said what makes the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, so powerful is their delegation, is they teach men to be able to do things and to do things by themselves without someone standing over them. And so that is the key. So you either have someone else who is literally doing the job, or what this says is Mathaniah was in charge of the guys who did the job. So either way, Nehemiah is not doing it. That's a key to leadership. I did a whole lesson one time on delegation, and that is important. So if you delegate, it won't be done exactly like you would do it. And you've got to factor that in. But it'll get done. And so you have to allow that. That's a simple key. And that's how guys learn. They learn in responsibility. And that's a key over time. Third issue has to do with the issue of gratitude. And this is the third lesson in making lists. The list in Nehemiah, he's actually acknowledging the contribution that these men were making. He's saying, this guy is in charge of worship. This guy takes care of that. This guy was the leader over these people. So what he's doing is Nehemiah is writing down their names because he was grateful for what they were doing. He was thankful for that. And the reason why it's written down is because gratitude needs to be expressed. And that's a simple leadership lesson. Now, we understand that we don't want people to only function by what they're getting out of it. We don't want people to, I will only do anything if I get a back rub from the pastor and every little... every time you do anything, the pastor's thanking you and whatever. But there are times that people need to be appreciated and recognized. So there's an incredible amount of work that gets done in our church. I don't know if you understand that. What a huge machine our congregation is. An incredible amount of work that gets done, and Pastor Mitchell and I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to sweat it. There are people, it will get done, not by us. And so that's if you have other people who are doing that, they actually are helping Pastor Mitchell and I. If I have to worry about these, dumb little details, then that takes away from worrying about big details, right? So the issue is it has to be expressed, and we see that in the Bible. 1 Thessalonians 1:2.
We give thanks to God always for all of you constantly mentioning you in our prayers, remembering before.
Yeah, that's it. So he says we give thanks to God. The part of this thanks is in prayer. It helps you. It's mentally and spiritually healthy for you to recognize and thank God for other people's contribution. Because if not, you become an ego head. You think you did it all. And that's not true. But also, this is, there's a lot of work that gets done, and people are not getting paid for it. But Paul says, but I'm thanking God. I'm lifting you up before God, asking God to... help you, expressing to God gratitude. Romans 16:1-6.
I commend to you Phoebe, our sister, who is a servant of the church in Centuria, that you may receive her in the Lord in a manner worthy of the saints, and assist her in whatever business she has need of you. For indeed she has been a helper of many, and of myself also. Greet Priscilla and Aquila, my fellow workers in Christ Jesus, who risk their own necks for my life, to whom not only I give thanks, but also all the churches of the Gentiles. Likewise, greet the church that is in their house. Greet my beloved Epaphroditus, who is the first fruits of Achaia to Christ. Greet Mary, who labored much for us.
Okay, so this is God's holy word, and he wanted it to be recorded. We're reading it 2,000 years later. Paul says, I am thankful for these people. Greet them because they bless me, they help me. This lady, that guy, this family, these people. And so he's expressing it. So, a simple leadership lesson. If you want to be effective on any level, you need to be someone who expresses gratitude. It's not a trick. It's not manipulating people. Not being a salesman. That's true. You have starts at every level. Any of you that are married, you got to start in your marriage, expressing gratitude. Things work well when gratitude is expressed. You know, common questions that I ask people when they come in for counseling is, do you say sorry? Do you say I love you? Do you say thank you? Do you say good things about your partner? And so often they've gotten in the habit of fighting without thank you. So it starts in marriage, in your ministry. You know, the whole point is almost everything you're involved in, unless you are the employer, people don't have to do it, right? Your wife doesn't have to put up with you or cook or clean. You know, the people in your band, they don't have to be there. And on all through life. And so from time to time, an effective leader expresses gratitude. Sometimes you say it personally. Sometimes you say it publicly. Sometimes you write it down. And so Nehemiah was an effective man. He had lists. And that is why these lists are written down, because it's important. Okay, let's open for questions then. Something you want to ask. Johnny? Is it possible to give too much? Tired of hearing that. If you ever say thank you again, I'm going to snap.
I guess they're wanting something from you other than gratitude.
Let's make up a possibility. So if you're saying to your wife, thank you, thank you, thank you, but she's been saying, will you take out the trash?
Yes.
And you're going, thank you, thank you, thank you. And she's going, look, great on the thanks, but why don't you just take out the trash? Right? So that would be a practical. I mean, obviously there can be a lot of theoreticals, but... not that that would ever apply. So that's just in case your neighbors or you meet somebody, you know. All right, Johnny. Other questions? Mark?
How much emphasis would be on a balance of from obviously from your perspective, you would delegate authority to someone, and you're still responsible because you can delegate authority but not the responsibility. Where do you draw the line on that? You know, I guess it's too vague. At what point do you think that you would have given somebody too much response or too much authority?
Well, the issue is first of all, the key in delegation, you don't give people, number one, what they cannot do. In other words, I don't say to somebody, I don't pick somebody, Eli, you are in charge of the church. Right? That's probably not going to be fair because he's not ready for that yet. Right? So you don't give them something that there is not in the realm of possibility. So often you give a small detail because you want to know if they can get things done. That's number one. Number two is you have to, if you're giving them too much responsibility, there are guys, of course, power goes to their head. So the moment you give them responsibility, then you have a long stream of people who come complaining, this guy's being a jerk, because it's become an ego trip to him. So then you need to have an ego correction. And so, you know, you function. Delegation is not even. That's why in discipleship is handcrafted. I don't speak to every one of you the same way, because you some of you I work out your background, your temperament. You know, you got to pray. That's why Jesus prayed before choosing the disciples. So that's a discipleship lesson, but that's true in anything. Is that if you're on the job and you are giving someone a task and they do well, then you could consider putting them in charge of a shift or a section or something like that, you know. But it has to be on the basis of how they're handling that. And sometimes it's a matter of instruction. So overall, Mark, one of the key things is I do not approach people as evil or stupid. In other words, I don't believe that people are evil or stupid. Now, they could prove that. I mean, they could prove that they are, but that's not my first approach. In other words, someone may not do something the way I want it done, or they may do something that has caused a problem, but they may be unaware that they are doing that. So I prefer, number one, if I'm trying to delegating bring somebody along, I prefer to begin and approach them as, you may not be aware of this, right? Rather than what kind of moron would, because I don't assume that they're stupid, and I don't believe that people are deliberately, you know, I want to wreck the concert, you know, I want to cause problems in the church. Most people are totally unaware. If you approach them like that, you can then resolve the problem. So, delegating, part of delegating is you have to factor in, if I delegate it to somebody, it's not done exactly like I would do it. If I want it done exactly like I would do it, then I should do it. But I can't. So, I have to balance that in. Now, there may be things it needs to be done the way I do it, but that may take time for me to instruct. So you take time to instruct people along that. And then you have people that it's just, that's not their thing. There are people that extra pressure. They do very well being told what to do in initiatives, not their thing. Now, okay, here's a job, do it. How? What they function well, pick that thing up, cut that off, put it over here. Fine, but if you just say, look, I'll be back this afternoon, have it done, that's not their thing, right? So that's probably not a person, so I can try to instruct them how to. South Africa, you got to imagine, when I was working with people there, I think the official unemployment rate was 37%, and it would be, for the people that I was dealing with, would be as high as 80% or so. So you have people, they'd never worked. And so I had guys that I was literally training them how to work. I remember years ago in Romania, that's what some of the guys said who are now pastoring and leaders. They said that Richard Brooks, they were all teenage kids, that he taught them how to work. You stay there in that little circle and you do this, and he was giving them work lessons. So they can change that. So you got to work out. Then there are people who's like, this is not going to be your thing. I'm never going to put you in charge, because that's not what you're good at. So, I don't know, that's giving a long answer.
Would you say that these are all connected? Like, you start a church or you're in a ministry, and if you start by knowing people's names and then giving gratitude when they do stuff, you'll be able to delegate because you'll win them? Would this be a good way?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so obviously Nehemiah, that's the key. Leadership is earned in some ways by relationship. Leadership cannot be demanded. Because you have a title, that's the lesson of pioneering. In pioneering a church, the people don't care who you are or where you came from, what your title is. They don't care that your doctrine is correct. What they want to know is, do they like you? So you win them to yourself so that they can build a relationship with Jesus, so that you can give them the vision, so that you can begin to craft their life and make disciples out of them. But they all go together, and always we have problems or men who don't understand that. They think that it's demanded. I'm in charge. And anytime you have to tell people you're in charge, you're not. That's a simple lesson, starting with your wife, right? If you've got to tell your wife you're in charge, you're not.
That's really like, I remember when I was out, it seemed like the guys in the church, they wanted to do everything. But they were like, they said, hey, we want to come to your house. We want to cut your grass for free. We want to do, and I was like, no, I'll pay you. You know what I mean? They wanted to do like, I mean, just like everything. Like even at my house, they wanted to do it all for free. And then they're like, no, it's okay. You know, the pastor, you know, we used to work in his Christian bookstore and for free, 8 hours, they would stay there. They wouldn't make any money.
Yeah.
And I felt like, man, these guys are like, I don't know if they got used to that, but they were wanting to like be taken advantage of. You know what I mean? So in the church, so I didn't have them do anything outside of the church at all for free, but it just seemed like everything, like they wanted to use their own gas, to use it. What was the line? I mean, what's a line when you're a pioneer pastor? When you're a bigger church, you pay for the gas, all the stuff. We didn't really have the money, so what? How do you, by just showing gratitude, they're okay with, like?
Well, yeah. I mean, number one, you're talking about if people who are wanting to do things for you. Mm-hmm. The Pastor Mitchell and I, that's not how we approach life. We don't. I don't have anybody do anything for me for free. I won't do that. And because you can easily take advantage of people, but there will always be a price to pay for it.
Yeah.
Right. They'll say it's for free, but I guarantee you, at some point later on, say, hey man, I've been cutting your grass for free. What do you mean I can't be sent out as a missionary to Ubangi?
Yeah.
Right. And so there's all. It's never for free. You change the dynamics.
Right.
So that's something number one is that we don't. The church is not, you know, leadership is service. It's not being served. That's number one. Number two, in a pioneer church, yeah, you have people who may be willing to help. So you have to balance that out. Yeah, you know, I mean, there's a jillion. There are people that, yeah, that may be helpful, but then you see the people that they're helping with an agenda. I'll help, but now you owe me. And that person, I would be very resistant to them helping in that kind of level. So, but it's not personal.
How about as far as delegating people? You're very limited, but things have to get done.
If you are very limited, is that what you're saying?
No, like delegating people, but they're limited, like as far as options.
Yeah, that they can't do much? Are we talking talent or time or what?
Yeah, not many people being willing to take that delegation or not having their heart wanting to do it.
Well, the you know, everything works by inspiration. That's first of all, you got to inspire people. That is the key. So, in every church, you have you may have seasons. You may have. You may have seasons where tons of people are willing to do lots of stuff, and you may have stuff that times when people are not. That may be because we have 100 other things going on. That may be because people have because they're not as inspired as you are. That's the key. So you can't demand people. So if you're ever having problems with people coming and doing stuff, then the key is you have to present the vision to them. People operate by inspiration, not by demand, not by command. And so anytime it is, there's a common, we get guys who in, let's say, smaller churches who complain that nobody wants to do stuff. Nobody wants, so then their answer is preaching sermons on why you're all lazy flakes because you're not out helping me or you're doing this or that. And that guy will never, it will never. So in some ways, the vision is not being presented to where the people buy in. That's if you have in general. In a church of our size, you have to be practical. So we have things that are not from time to time well attended or well supported. I'm not going to make my entire self-worth is not going to rest on that. So we got a lot of stuff going on. So if you have something and you inspire people and let's do this, and then sometimes then people will get behind it and you'll have more people than you need, and other times you'll struggle. But the issue is that you know it may be what's going on at that moment in time. There's all kinds of different things. So, but the main thing, it's never a good strategy when people aren't responding to the level you think. If your answer is berating them, that's never a good strategy. That doesn't work well. The answer is inspiring them. So you point out why you need their help, what we're trying to accomplish. You know, it depends on what level you're at. Depends on whether you're in charge or whether that was just something you're trying. So, Ken?
Do we not delegate because of our pride or because we don't trust people or what?
Yeah. Yeah, we had, guys that are no longer with us, Bill Coolidge especially, and I think Houghton was known for this, is that, they're in their 50s still running the lights and the sound and everything in the concert ministry, right? And so the issue was, you're all idiots and you can't do it as good as I can. But that's stupid. Well, you know, why would I want to do that? I don't develop people. So it is pride, yes. And so that's the whole point, is if you delegate, when you delegate, sometimes things don't get done as good as you think. So is it about your ego? Right? So when I came back to Prescott this time, which is now 11 years ago, man, time is rolling on. So when I first came, one of the big issues was in outreaches. These young disciples are pulling the altar calls. When we have a whole bunch of return pastors, why don't we let the return pastors? They know how to do it. And I said, absolutely not. So the issue is it possible that we can get a young kid up there pulling altar call? We've had guys who pull altar calls and they forget to mention Jesus one time. And that has happened when it's been, when we have visitors here of, from out of town or whatever, you know. So is that your disciple? Yes. That's my disciple who doesn't talk about Jesus. That's great. He forgot to tell them to lift their hands. So, but that's the whole, but I believe in discipleship. So it's not about me. It's about there. I am going to give guys a shot. I believe in men. Because there's something about a young man being able to do an outreach, pull altar call, and get a response, that's worth it. So I build into it that people might make mistakes and not do things well. So if it's about me, yes, that's why people don't delegate, is usually because of pride.
So you have given somebody, a task to do, and they don't do it well, or they don't do it. How do you go about explain to them, you know, what you need, what needed to be done, how they could do it better, you know, how do you go about
Yeah, well, you know, that depends on the person, that depends on the seriousness or the magnitude of the of what we're talking about. I can't put in one formula, what do you say? But many times the problem is they don't understand why it is important. So you have to explain to them why this is important. We need to do it this way because this is what happens. Did you see that? You know, so you try to give people the vision. Nehemiah, going back to the book of Nehemiah, what Nehemiah did was he explained, he looked over the condition of the walls, and then he cast the vision to them. You see how our walls are burnt, broken and burnt with fire, and so, guys, we could build walls here. We could rebuild the testimony, and they bought into it. So, now when they're not doing it, then again, I don't approach people like you're an idiot because you didn't do it the way that I said. I try to explain why I want it done a certain way, and then, you know, that you it goes up from there. Now, I also know how to kick butt too. I'm good at it. But that's not my preferred default method, right? And so if someone is not, look, I've told you this before, right? So the information is not the problem here. And then you try to get big picture. Look, if you tell me, if that's a discipleship, a guy who is a disciple, you tell me that you want to be trusted with people's lives, you want to preach the gospel, but you can't, you know, be trusted to make sure that there's, you know, chairs or microphones on the outreach or something. So you tie it to a bigger picture. It's important to me that you can follow instructions. That's part of, it's bigger than pieces of paper or pieces of equipment. I'm looking big picture. Can this guy follow instructions? I said I want it done like this. So if you can't, you know, you begin to do that. And then there are guys that just, this is not helpful for you at this time. Right? Good. Anybody else?
Pastor, in delegating, do you find that you can, I guess, inhibit someone's growth if you give them everything? So is there an element that people have to have the ability to make a mistake or fail and learn from that, as opposed to just kind of spoon-feeding them and then you did, you know, almost you gave them all the answers or the opportunities to walk through the right door?
Well, again, you all are asking questions that it's not like the formula, this is what you say, this is what you do, but you know, in delegation, the whole point is, number one is that our big picture is discipleship. That is what we're built on. So the bigger picture is, And some of you, I've made a little speech to you in bringing correction, is I'm not just trying to get a job done. I'm teaching you how to be a man of God, right? So that's the bigger picture in getting things done. So, you know, number one is you don't give people too much before I know that they can handle a small thing. That's the issue. So I joked and said we're putting Eli in charge of the church. So that wouldn't be fair. So what we need to know is, can Eli handle an outreach and be faithful to you know, prayer and church and whatever. So he shows that. Okay, now we give him some responsibility and you move on in stages and see whether they can handle that. And then there comes, you know, a concert director, his, you know, duties, everything. What's he responsible for? Everything. If something goes wrong, whose fault is it? Yours. And so that's a big responsibility, and the reason why, and the guys are often maxed out, there are a million details, as you well know. But that's deliberate. because pastoring is a million details. I move from, in the space of a few minutes, serious crises of a person's marriage to determining the future of, you know, a missionary, to talking someone off the ledge, to making a decision, to dealing with an international crisis. So I got to be able to juggle. And I can't get hung up on, it's not like I can do one thing and then it's like, oh, I'm exhausted, man. It's just, you have to be able to, you know, not take it personal. It's like counseling. People think that when they come and counsel with me, they'll come 5 years later and they'll go, it's like what I told you. It's like, I have no clue what you're talking about. Honestly, because I can't, my brain's not, you know, I still got the lyrics to Gilligan's Island stuck in there, man. I can't keep what happened to you when you're a kid in my brain. You know what I mean? It's just not, I got to kind of purge it. So people tell me the life-wrenching issues, I'll help them at the time, and then I got to move on. I purge it out. So that's it. You're learning to juggle with details. You're learning with things that are not that crucial. If something doesn't get washed or doesn't get mailed, I may speak to you about it, but it's not the end of the world. But the lesson that I give in discipleship is, someday, if you can't follow my instructions now, then I've given some of you this little speech, someday I'll be giving you instruction and it will be people's lives at stake. And that's why I want you to do what I say. You've got to learn to do what I say, because it's bigger than microphones or printing or mail outs or vans or anything else we're dealing with. That's a life lesson. Nothing?
Are there some like practical list we should be keeping? Like I have, you know, some basic prayer list, but like,
So let's talk some practical lists that you should be keeping right now. So would be prayer lists. So if we say multiple lists, why do we have more than one? Why do you have more than one?
Different levels of people, like different areas. That's true.
So some lists that you should have if you want to. If you want to be a leader, lists of new converts. Every disciple should know who the new converts are. You should learn new converts' names. And I often ask at breakfast, who's that guy? That's something a disciple should be learning, names of new converts. People who are missing. Those are two things that would be very practical for every disciple. If you want to be a man of God or you want to be a blessing in any way, those are two lists you should be keeping mentally or written down on paper. Who's been missing? George and Carolyn Shields have been missing from our church now for weeks. Dad and I were talking about it on Sunday night or Wednesday night, just the other day. I was saying, you know, hey, where's George and Carolyn Shields? And Dad happened to run into George in the thing. So George has had I don't know if they call it an ulcer on your leg or whatever, one of those, a wound that won't heal on his leg, and it's been too painful to drive. So they've been missing now. It's been a month, right? Did any of you notice that they weren't here? No. Caleb, look at his mouth. He's like, no. He's looking guilty. That's a great fake. So, right? But there are other people that also have been missing. Some through sickness, some because they're spiritually discouraged. So you want to be a man of God, but that's what pioneering is. Who do you think does that when you're pioneering? You do that. So that's not a skill you want to learn when you go out. So those would be two practical lists. Good. Very good question. Good. I like it. We cover some ground here. All right, guys. I think that's enough for one day. Start writing.